Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Wait, so you really want to make a podcast?
Yeah, what if we just sang our music?
Maybe we should get some real music, Samantha.
The podcast king.
Oh, you're still recording. Three, two.
Survival Jobs is a podcast spotlighting artists, their side hustles, and their passions.
Hosted by Samantha Titzelo and Jason A. Coombs.
Boom.
Sweet.
Okay.
Love it.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, Sycorax.
This episode is dropping July 15th. Now, we're talking way from the past because, you know, of all my travels. But if it's July 15th today, that means the film festival is next week.
Oh my gosh, it's in a week.
Tell everyone what to do. Guys, I will be there, and I just found out today I'm going to be a moderator, and
yes.
I can't even wait.
So, y'all, we still have this discount. If you want to get tickets, please, you can save 10% on your tickets by putting in the code BFFSUMMER on our website. But, yes, Sam was like, tell them all the details. So I'm going to take 3 minutes to let you guys know all about the film fest. So we're showing 8 film blocks, right? There's a female future, the future's female block by women creators.
Ooh,
there's a black stories block. There's an LGBTQ block. There
I
is an animated block before we show Moana. Yes. We're also showing a lockdown diaries, like films made during the pandemic. They're not all about the pandemic, but they were made when people were looking for to be creative during this like really frustrating time when everybody was stuck at home, right? And there's a horror block. And which is like a family, kind of like family ties, we're calling it, to open the festival.
The horror block is going to really transition us into our next guest. And I know we'll do a little mic check before, but how dope is that?
So Edward, his movie Make-A-Wish is playing at the Bridgeport Film Fest, Dark Night of the Soul block, the horror block on Friday night. So if you're going to listen to Edward, you guys are going to fall in love with him because he's amazing. And you're going to want to see his film. So you're going to want to come. You're going to use that discount, save 10% off. And tickets are mad cheap, y'all. A one-day ticket is $12. So if you save 10% off of 12, I think that's $250-ish, maybe.
Hello.
Maybe. I don't know. I was really bad at math. Still am.
See, like,
but it's like 10 bucks. A weekend ticket is $25. That's like, you know, $25 for 3 days. And if you get the 10% off, that's like less than that. So.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Something I don't know. Are there any, like, aside from the films, are there any, like,
yes,
events?
Yes. We have a screenwriting event on Saturday with a gentleman named Brian Hogan. He is a MFA screenwriting professor at Sacred Heart University. So he's doing a screen. He's doing a work, like, turning your thoughts and your work into like a, like your ideas into like a screenplay, you know.
I need to go to that.
You should. It's you know.
I might. Well, if I'm not busy being my talent liaison.
Yes, because Sam is our talent liaison.
Or my moderating duties.
Yeah, so we have that on Saturday morning. We also have a women in film and TV panel. And we have some amazing women. We have Kristen Donaldson. She's currently an actress on the show Flatbush Misdemeanors on Showtime.
Hello.
So she's going to be talking about being a working actress in film and TV right now. We have Makeba Ross. She's a director and a producer. Aiza Fatima. She is a Muslim director and writer and producer and actress. Susan Bedusa. Sahar Al-Sawef. Trish Clark is the Nutmeg Institute president. Like, we have amazing bomb-ass females who are going to be talking about being bomb-ass females in this industry and how we need to have more bomb-ass females in this industry. So I'm super excited for that.
We love to hear it. Oh, wow. That just got me hyped. I was doing a dance.
I know. I wish people can see you dancing.
Tell me more.
I was feeling that.
I was feeling it, too. I'm excited. I'm hyped. I can't wait. And thank you. Thank you so much for including me being a part of the festival. I can't wait.
Thank you. Yeah, Sam is going to be.
What am I going to wear?
We got to get dressed up.
What am I going
to
wear to moderate?
On Friday night, we're having a red carpet gala at 4 o'clock.
Do you need me to run the event? I'm an event planner.
I
don't know if you know this.
But yeah, we're showing this documentary that Sam is moderating called And Seen, directed by Liz Ortega. It challenges the mainstream perceptions of disability through the perspective of an actress and wheelchair dancer named Jamie Patron, who's originally from Connecticut. And it's an incredible film. It's really beautiful. You see her journey as an artist. And I was like thinking about who can moderate this. And I'm like, fuck, obviously Sam, because that's what we do every week, talking to artists about their journeys. And so I had to ask her.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, that's going to be super cool. And then we're showing Moana for free. So if you don't want to buy a ticket for the weekend, but you want to come see Moana on Sunday at 1:30, we're going to show a couple animated shorts before it. And then we can watch Moana. That's completely free. If you can't make it to anything else, buy a ticket for the whole weekend or just for a day, and there's gonna be food trucks. We're doing a live art exhibit. We have this painter coming in and doing a portrait of Chadwick Boseman outside. We have a filmmaking workshop, how to film on your cell phone on Saturday. Like, it's like a lot of really cool events. Check out the website. It's gonna be a lot of fun, and you get to meet me and Sam, because we'll be there. And it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, we can do a Survival Jobs Pod host meet and greet also.
Yes, we will.
Just DM us if you want to meet us. If you want to pick, we'll send it to the Instagram. Can you imagine?
Yes.
If people are like, oh my gosh, I have to meet these guys.
They will. And also, we gave out free tickets last week, right? For our last episode. We'll do that again for this one, I think, as well.
Yeah.
I think we said that last week, too.
DM us.
Yeah. DM us something.
Whatever week.
The first three people who DM us something. We're begging for
last week interaction. Last week we said DM us your favorite episode, I think. And this week DM us your dream guest to come on. And say also, I want tickets to the film fest.
Yes.
And we got you. We got you. We got you.
So come check us out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Jason, I am so proud of you. And I know I've said this before, that my ex-boyfriend, Adam, shout out, used to say he hated when, like, his peers would say they're proud of him because he thought it was, like, degrading. But I don't think so. I think it's, like, nice.
It is nice.
Like, even just hearing you describe the whole weekend, like, that is incredible. That's amazing.
Thank you. I had a lot of help.
I cannot wait. So in conclusion, people, go to the film festival, support this amazing thing Jason did.
Thank you.
A lot of help, but he's very humble. But Jason did this and has been busting his ass. I can barely juggle just doing the podcast. So
it's crazy.
This past week, I was like, Jason, you have to do all of the editing because I have three interviews. Like, I couldn't even juggle that after the year of, like, laying
it's hard.
For a month.
It's hard.
So he is a superstar extreme.
Thank you.
So let's go support him in Bridgeport and film makers of all kinds.
Yes, it's going to be super exciting. Thank you so much. Mic drop.
Thank you so much for doing that. Yeah, mic drop. Major mic drop. I don't have much to say. I just really wanted to talk about the festival today. And
thank you.
Get people hyped for that. It's July 15th, and that is shocking. Wait, what's the space it's going to be at? I don't even know.
Yeah, the Klein Memorial. So it's a 1,400-seat theater. And we were like, in the spring, we were like, we need to socially distance people, keep everybody spread. But now, like, everyone's like, who cares? COVID's over. Obviously not me and Sam, but, like, other people. But it's a historic theater that Martin Luther King spoke at and a bunch of other people. It's a historic theater. Yeah. It's beautiful, gorgeous, Equity House. So in Bridgeport, and Bridgeport gets a very negative reputation. That was like my big thing
Actors
for wanting.
Actors Equity?
They do like touring shows. I mean, I wish more touring shows went here.
Do you know I am Equity? Should I tell them when I walk in? Should I have my Equity?
It'll be on your, laminate.
I have not paid my dues in over a year, so I hope I'm still Equity. I don't know.
It's fine. It's a pandemic.
We have to talk to Edward.
Yes.
Get your tickets. BFF 2021. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's our hashtag. BFF 2021, baby.
Jason, tell us about Edward.
Yes. Edward.
Please.
Edward Hong is an actor based in Los Angeles who has somehow etched out a working acting career for the past decade in TV, film, commercial, stage, and voiceovers. He is the creator of the BIPOC/PGM voiceover list that currently has over 1,300 voice actors of color and has recently ventured into producing his own content with the horror comedy short film Make-A-Wish, which has currently been accepted into way too many festivals to name, but most notably being Holly Shorts, Rhode Island International, Fantaspoa, Film Quest, Nightmares, New York City Horror, Screamfest, and many, many more, including the Bridgeport Film Fest. He is also the proud father of three cats and has an unhealthy obsession with Cinnabons. Sweet. So we get him into the Zoom?
Get Edward into the Zoom. Get him into the Zoom. Get him into
the Zoom. Barbara, can you bring Edward into the Zoom, please? Our virtual assistant.
Barb.
All right.
Edward. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on a Friday. By the way, people, it's Friday. This is coming out on Thursday, but today's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 9 o'clock in the morning where Edward is right now. He's there. He's up.
He sure is.
Oh, wow. You know, I didn't even put that together. Wow. You look great for 9 a.m., especially pandemic.
I'm glad to hear that because, let's see, I got about like 4 or 5 hours of sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
And then after this, I'll take like a half hour break. And then I have a Zoom edition. So, and then after that, then I have to record for a gig out in the Burbank area here in Los Angeles. So it's going to be a busy day. And then I can finally rest after that. But
well, you're booked and busy.
Wow. I love that. Booked and busy. I love that, Jason. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know I've been saying this on the past couple of episodes, but I love when Jason knows somebody and brings them onto the podcast because it's so exciting for me not knowing you or ever meeting you. So I'm super excited to talk to you.
Thank you. When we met, it was through the Scream Fest Film Festival.
Yeah.
It was like
October, right? Like around Halloween. Yeah. It was pandemic time. I was telling Sam that there was like no official kind of like meet and greet because of the pandemic. So it was like a drive-in. It was drive-in movies. Your movie was playing. And so was my good friend, Jacqueline. Her movie was playing as well. So I went with her to support and your movie was awesome. We'll get into that later. But I remember like after the screening, we were all standing in this big circle, right? Like just like with our masks on, we're all like 8-10 feet apart from each other, trying to like talk about, you know, how great your movies were. It was a very interesting time.
So tell us how you've been over the whole pandemic. It's been a wild ride. So let us know how you've been doing, how your art's been, how your mind has been, what's going on.
Wow. this question, I'm sure, I know it's a big one for many of us. Where do I begin? I am currently good. But throughout the pandemic, like many, it was certainly rough. As many of us, when it started out, especially when the shutdown orders happened here in Los Angeles, like around March 13 to 15th of last year, it was hard, especially obviously for everyone in California, but for my particular field in terms of actors and the creatives, it was especially hard because it was like there was at that point no way to perform. There was no way to audition. There was no way to do anything. So if you take away the one thing that we were dependent on, like, you know, the idea of like being able to act, to audition kind of thing, it certainly made us a little stir crazy. And I know it applies to everyone who, you know, not just people who are actors, but for actors who that's their identity. That's what they are dependent on. It was particularly rough. So that, and then along came like the Zoom theater thing, which was like our way of adapting to it, which at first was very rough. It was terrible. Like, you know, most of the Zoom theater was just like a bunch of people coming out wearing their pajamas clothing and just trying to do like acting. And it was bad for the audience because it wasn't really fun to watch. But for actors, I mean, it was a release. So there was that. So there was that aspect of the journey. And then like the pandemic, it just went on these huge up and downs kind of thing. And some of the things I talk about does affect to why I did what I did, especially the voiceover list that we will talk about later.
For sure.
But when I had my first, as we all did, our first quarantine birthday, my birthday is May 26th. Not too long after that was the George Floyd incident. It was the George Floyd.
Yeah, so, it was right after.
And then so that affected obviously all of us. And then not too long after that too, this, because of the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement, and then there was like, especially in the theater scene, there was a movement to kind of like address the systemic racism that was very rampant within the theater community and obviously Hollywood as well. But theater especially because it's been so riddled with these issues and the terms of like predominantly white institutions and how it has affected artists of color. And so there was an explosion of just like these confessions, these stories, these horror stories of just like what they went through in Broadway, how it affects like us as artists, whether like a lot of times we don't even get the jobs or even be seen, or when we do, how we are treated in that sense, or how we are treated as like the token minority, or like if it's a major or most major theater companies, they will use them as like, here's the minority plays of the year, here's the black
exactly play. Here's a yeah
but they will never see us for the main, like the, like if they're doing a Shakespeare production or another production of Guys and Dolls or whatever, like one of those good old chestnut favorites for white people, they will never, So then that affected me personally, because in a way I kind of, me and a few others waged a war with a former acting school. Like this school like was riddled with these problems for a long time. And was it worth it? I say yes. I think at this point on, and I think a lot of, especially not just artists of color, for people of color, they also have a similar experience, that the pandemic was the point where like things that we used to take for granted, and not just artists of color, as well as like people of historically excluded communities, whether it be women or LGBT communities, where they're like the things that we used to, you know, people would do to us, that it was no longer acceptable. Yeah. And that was like
for sure
the learning point of it. So in terms of the question of how have I been doing during the course of the pandemic, it was a massive learning process of just like where my integrity was, and where like if someone said this to me or did this to me, that I would just be like, nah, you know. And if it didn't sound polite, it's not. It's like, it's, I'm just going to tell you that what you just did was extremely racist or extremely problematic, and you're gonna know about it. So there was that. Now we go to like the end of 2020, things got better, and then obviously things got a lot worse because cases were going up crazy in there,
especially in LA.
I think at this point, like a lot of us, I lost a few friends to the pandemic. So I remember it, like in the beginning I lost two of them. And so I took it very personally when people did not believe in the pandemic, or people who were like, oh, don't live in fear, that kind of thing. At this point, that term, don't live in fear, it's like a trigger for me. Like you say that, I will probably get really mad at you, because it's so dumb when people say that. So that, like, my partner has been with me in terms of like, I go through these huge mental like mood swings, and just like where I'm great and I'm crashing, or I'm just crying like hysterically for no reason, or I'm just raging and I go through all these emotions. So thankfully, I think it has calmed down, or at least just accept that there are people who don't take the pandemic seriously and we can't do anything about it. They're adults, we're adults.
Yeah.
What can you do? I am good right now. Like, you know, the acting, like the community has survived, like the, we have been able to perform. And even during the height of the pandemic, like SAG-AFTRA, the actors unions have been really good about like enforcing the COVID protocols. So there was a way for actors to get back to work.
Edward, I just wanted to also like, I remember our friend, our mutual friend, Jacqueline, who I love, shout out to Jacqueline. She was telling me about like, before I met you, she was telling me about what was happening with this act, because Jacqueline was a member of this acting school as well.
Yeah.
So she was telling me, and I was just so impressed, like even before I knew you, but she was telling me about this guy in her class who was taking on this system, and like, it's very admirable, and you should be very proud of yourself. A side question I have, because I had a similar kind of experience, not with an acting school, but with like a management team, where I allowed myself to like put up with things that I probably shouldn't have. But then like last year when all this shit was happening, I was like, no, I'm not taking it anymore. Did you feel like any kind of like guilt or anything about that? Like about maybe not speaking up sooner?
Yes, definitely.
And how did you get over that is my second part.
I don't know if I exactly quite got over it. It still lives within me. Like there are things that I wish I spoke out, or it was unacceptable. Like I would tell one story that when people ask about like my time there, and there was one particular story that stood out, which was just like, it was in the advanced class. And so there was a black woman, a large black woman who was in the class for reading, like she moved up from the intermediate class to the advanced class. And the teacher had this thing where at the beginning he would say he would recommend a voice coach because he was just like, so you can play around, you can like, you know, experiment your voice because it's good to have range, which sounds fine on paper. But then by the second time she did a scene, now we understood what was the intent of that. And when he asked her again, and she was like, oh, no, I didn't do any of the voice classes. And he said, why not? And she's like, I didn't think I needed it. And then he got into the reason of it. And that was where I should have been like, man, there's something wrong with the school, because he was like, for a large, this is a white man telling this black woman, for a large black woman like you, you need to be able to have a deep register so that your voice can match your body. And so she was
that makes me so enraged. I am mad.
So she was just like, her eyes just widened, and she was just like,
yeah.
Okay, hold on. Did you just tell me that my voice that I'm proud of, that this is my voice that I've been raised with, like I was born with this voice, that I need to do something because you're telling me, a white man, that my voice is not acceptable in the industry? And so once she started going to that, this teacher just like leaned back in his chair and was like, you have a bad attitude. And everyone's like, whoa.
Like, these people should not, these types of people, sorry to interrupt you, I'm mad. These types of people should not be allowed to be teachers, okay? Or people, or humans.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel you, because I used to run an acting school, so I saw a lot of that as well. So it's not, you know, and I was in New York doing it. So it's widespread, unfortunately.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. I know it's like very, it's a vulnerable place to be in to share that. So I appreciate you opening up with us.
No problem.
Wow. How do we transition to survival jobs after that? What I will say is, you know, I feel like this theme has kind of lowered, but I hope this doesn't just get sidetracked. You know, I hope people don't get complacent. And that's my biggest thing. It's like, we can't get complacent. We have to keep the fire going on this.
Yeah.
And I think
you are doing that.
That's what I was just going to say. The people with platforms and artists, especially, won't let it get complacent. Right. And so, hopefully the people with platforms, doing the thing. Wow. We started this episode heavy, Jason. I'm with you. I love it too. But now, how do we make that transition? Like, okay, big turn.
Well,
I'm fine with big turns because I know this is all about survival jobs. So we can
love talking about everything here.
Yeah, it was like, this is an artist journey, man. Tell us, have you worked? What was your best survival job?
My best survival job, man. I don't know if there was the best survival job because they're all kind of rough in their own.
They all are rough.
Yeah,
I think that I can tell you the worst survival job, but the best survival job.
If you don't have one, you don't have one.
I don't have one. I think honestly, because it's like they were a means to an end, and so kind of just tolerated. So like I had like a bunch of restaurant jobs. I had a bunch of restaurant jobs that I was grateful to have because, you know, just having employment is excellent. Totally. But then obviously the stress of just working 30 to 40 hours or 50 hours a week, even, especially like when you're really low on money, is even if the place is great, the people are great, but just working, especially in the restaurant industry, as anyone who can attest who does work in that field, is the most exhausting, like soul draining aspect of like the service. It's because, you know, you're dealing with humanity. You really have to deal with humanity. And when you are placed in a position where they really do see you as above you, then it's just like a great insight, which then I would go, if I ever have like children of my own, it would be a requirement that you have to work in a service industry. You will really see how humanity treats you. Like, you will see good ones. You'll see the ones who really see you as humans and really acknowledge you and be like, you know, just because you're a server doesn't mean you're just a server. You're another human being, and I will respect you for that. And then see the ones who don't, like, you know. And so I've worked in like fast chain restaurants to like the higher end restaurants. And there's no preference. Like, sometimes I actually prefer like the Applebee's and the Chili's because it's like, you know, if there are egotistical people, then that's what it is. But then there's something about people who have money and they see you and they talk to you in a certain manner. It's like some are nice, but the majority were absolute scumbags. And so that, you know, we'll, that might actually cover into my worst survival jobs. So,
yeah.
But yes, best survival jobs, I would say really like, okay, there is one, but then I think it's kind of cheating because it was kind of like in the acting field itself. When casting director workshops used to be a thing, I worked for a facility called Actors Key West. And so the people were great. And it was just great, like hanging around. I was just a receptionist. It was just great hanging around, you know, doing the most simplest task and then just meeting like other actors and casting directors and agents and just like talking with them. And it's great because it's like, it's still part of your industry. And it was super chill. And the people at the top are great. So yeah, I would say that might be my best survival job. It didn't pay that much at all because it is what it is, but the experience was nice.
Good. Aww. That's nice. So what was, do you have a specific worst or just, it was in general?
The restaurant? Yes, I do.
That laugh.
The worst one. Oh my God. It was when I first moved to Los Angeles. At the beginning it was okay. It is a 1-800 company that involves dentists. I just basically gave away what company it is. but it's a 1-800 place that at the beginning wasn't bad. It was like, you had to work 40 hours a week. You were basically, we were the customer specialist. So basically it's like you like anytime anyone needed a dentist, they would call and we would be the ones to pick up, like, and I would do my customer service voice, be like, thank you for calling 1-800-DENTIST. My name is Edward. How can I help you today? And so,
yes.
So it wasn't bad at all because we had to work 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, but we could leave any time if we had an audition and just come back and just finish the rest of the hours. And at the beginning of the first 7 months, it was good. The CEO was super chill. Like he had a great and relaxed environment for the company. Like if people had like mini basketball hoops, they would shoot them, or like we would bring our guitars and we would just kind of like play around until we had calls. And so it was just like this entire floor of people. There were like maybe like 100 people on this floor. So it was a huge like environment. And then like when the CEO retired, and a new CEO came. And then we called it like basically the draconian, like the dictatorship, because like he was like all these fun things, like, you know, this basketball, you playing computer games and all that kind of thing, eliminate them all. You need to be focused on your job at all times, no distractions whatsoever. I didn't take well at all to that. So I think my mood soured greatly to the point, like, you know, if the people, because in this particular customer care, like, you know, most of the calls were unfortunate. I got to understand a lot about how crappy American healthcare is because a lot of people did not have
money. Man.
Like, they had Medicaid, which is like just crappy state assistance dental care. And so it's just like people who had like major complicated teeth problems, they would be like, I had like my like back tooth, like fraction and a half, and I don't know what to do with it. And then like, all I could tell them is that if all they have is Medicaid, then the only thing that they can do is the dentist is to pull that tooth out. That's it. Like that's the only solution. So
yeah,
it was frustrating because it was just like, you know, we would refer them to a dentist, and then we would refer them to a dentist that when a customer called back was like, hold on Yelp, they had like 50 one-star reviews. Why did you refer me to this dentist? And I would just be like, the official answer is that they were certified by 1-800-DENTIST. So they are a good dentist. So that was what I had to say. And it got, and then when the new CEO came, I would just be honest and just be like, it reminded me of that scene from The Incredibles where the main character, like he works at the insurance place and then he tells people like, okay, this is what you really should do. Yeah. I started doing that. I started being like, all right, you're right. Like, and I would look up on, I'm like, yeah, this dentist is, I wouldn't say terrible because I was still being recorded. This dentist, I do understand your concerns with this dentist. I would recommend checking that search service that you just used.
Yeah.
And look for the dentist in your area that has good reviews and you can go from there. And so I did get called up from that. They're like, Edward, we heard you say that. That's not, you shouldn't do that. It was crazy. And then there, how I got fired from that job ultimately was that I worked a late night shift, or because, you know, there were times I would take over the graveyard shift. So I worked from like 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. And oh, so we would get the strangest phone calls. Like, I would get so many people on meth or some sort of weed or cocaine or some sort of thing during those times. I had one caller who, like, thank God bless him, he committed to being Smeagol and Gollum for or just really,
hey, Edward, I'm sorry, I was just trying to practice on my voiceover skills, so I thought that would be a good way to work on
that. Jason, that was funny.
you're committed. But so the call that got me fired was that there was this woman who, you know, had this tooth problems, which is fine. Like, you know, she needed someone that can help her at 2 a.m. I was like, I'll do the best I can. Most dentists are asleep. And at this point, you're going to have to pay emergency out of pocket. And so she was like, okay, I want a dentist who can take my insurance and I don't have to pay out of pocket. And I'm like, okay, I already knew the answer. The answer is going to be impossible. It's going to be no. But, you know, you don't say that to a customer. So I kept going. I was like, I kept looking. I call these dentists and most of them are like, I'm asleep right now. I can't do anything. And then there was one dentist who was in the Las Vegas area. I remember it was Las Vegas. And it was like, I can help her. She is going to have to pay out of pocket until her insurance can cover her. And I got back to the woman and she was like, this answer is not acceptable. You're not doing your fucking job because I need a dentist who can cover my insurance right now. And I'm like, that's not how it works. It's 2 a.m. You are going to have to pay out of pocket because it's outside of business hours. She's like, I am a lawyer. I know how these things work. So just find me a dentist where I don't have to pay anything out of pocket.
Okay.
And then I just got so fed up with her. I said, lady, tough luck. Okay. Go find your own dentist. Help the phone. And then I was just sitting there. I'm like, this is not going to bode well for me. Sure enough, about like 10 minutes later, one of the other callers he gets the lady, and then he gets the complaint that there's a guy named Edward who said this, and he told me tough luck, and he hung up on me. What kind of place is this? I'm going to sue your ass. I'm going to sue this place because, you know, I am a lawyer, blah, 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 blah. And so he told the person who was running the floor that what happened. And then she was like, hey, so I heard about this. I'm gonna have to ask you to go home because, like, you know, this is not gonna bode well. And I'm like, okay.
What a snitch that person was.
Right?
Yeah. So then, like, it was like the next day, it was like a later show, 3 p.m. I was like, just working. Everything was quiet. I was like, oh, okay, everything's fine. All right, cool. And it was like around like 5 p.m., 2 hours on the floor, that they're like, Edward, we would like to see you in the office. I'm like, ah, yes.
Yikes.
And of course, lo and behold, it didn't take long at all. There was like a nice, fat, little envelope on the desk. And when you see that, you're like, ah, yes, this is the end. I am fired. I'm totally fired. And yeah, I was. I was fired. They were like, yes.
Ah, yes.
You heard about this. And the lady said that she was going to sue us, and that's very concerning. So we are just going to let you
go. On what grounds is she going to sue, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, so
she wasn't a fucking lawyer. Give me a break.
So
if she was a lawyer, she would have better insurance. She would have a place to go. She wouldn't be calling this fucking hotline to find a dentist. Give me a break.
So that was, so when they fired me, they're like, oh, we're so sorry. And then I remember I kind of like startled them. I was just like, I'm actually really happy about this. Thank you so much. Like, thank you. Thank you. Your company sucks, by the way. And then I left.
How good did that feel, Bill, to like say those words at the end?
I know. It felt good. It felt good. Yeah. Just, like, your company sucks. I wish I would like, fuck you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but it's fine.
To say, Edward, we've interviewed 13, 14 guests. 15, I don't know, Jason. I don't even know where I am anymore. That is my favorite worst survival job story so far. So congratulations. I give you that award for this deep into the season. That story was gold. I'm sorry you had to go through it, but like, what a good story.
You produced and starred in this really awesome short film called Make a Wish. And that's how we met, right? Like we were saying before, I went to this film festival and I saw your film and it's incredible. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been accepted into what, over 50 festivals? Way more than that. Okay.
So officially, like, it got to a point where I'm just like, I used to like really like track how, what the number was. I'm like, oh, these are how many number. Now yeah. I just created a Laurel called, I just, the Laurel is just officially way too many festivals. Like that's where we're at right now. Like if you were to ask, okay, but if you're like, Edward, how many is it really? I'd be like, it's currently at 130. Like it's.
So I was way off. 130. You were, wow.
It's
it's accepted to 130.
Yeah, 130. And so like people are like, oh, this is and
then, amazing.
And it's and then, you know, I know people are like, oh, some a lot of those festivals are probably like garbage anyways. I'm like, yeah, some of them are a little like throwaway festivals, but a majority of them were like acknowledged, respected genre horror film festivals. So the fact that our so in terms of how this short film came to be, it started with my partner because she needed better demo reel footage. That's what it was. It was just like I just need better demo reel footage because everything I have is utter garbage. So I was like, okay, well, we need, so what can we do? And so then there was this writer friend, Ivan Seng, who wrote this version of the script. And it was something that was collecting dust for years. It was something that was just sitting around. And so the beginning was just like, we would just take a simple camera and just point and shoot and just shoot something. And that would be the end of that. So that was the beginning of it. It was like, there was no intentional film festival circuit whatsoever, but just like, we're just going to shoot it and just have footage of it. And then I contacted directors I knew who might be interested. And then we were lucky to have the director we have, Din Tai, who just got off the success of his first short film that got into also a gajillion short film festivals and got him.
That's amazing.
Like, got him fellowships at NBC and ABC and like, he did an internship with Ryan Murphy because of this short film.
Wow. And so
the fact that he was like, I asked him and he immediately said yes within a minute later. And I was like, wait, hold on. I haven't even sent you the script yet. He's like, I don't care. Let's just do something. And I'm like, okay. But because we had Din involved, like things just somehow exploded. Where like production value went up considerably, and then he brought his people on board, and then we brought a third producer because we're like, crap, we need a third producer to make this work. And so we brought in Diane Foster, who like was an experienced producer, kind of like helped us along with a lot of the things. And so what started as a very simple project became to that this thing. And then like when we finished it, we're like, all right, we're gonna do film festival circuits. And then we did like, oh yeah, we did Kickstarter to raise funds, because I did believe that even though it was my partner and I, Josephine Chang's, our first time really producing something, we wanted everyone to be paid. Like even though this was a passion project, we wanted every single person to be paid.
Of course.
It wouldn't be at the normal daily rate, but it would be at, you know, would you be okay with this kind of rate? And thankfully all of them were game for that. It was great that every single crew person was able to be paid. And then we had money for the festival submissions. And so when we started submitting to it, we just thought, we did not think this was a horror film. This was just going to be a comedy. It was just a comedy.
Yeah.
Albeit a dark comedy, but just a comedy. And so when we started submitting early, a festival did contact us and was like, hey, we loved your film. You submitted to the wrong category. I'm like, what category was it then?
Yeah.
It's a horror film. It's a genuine horror film. And we're like, it is? It's a horror film?
Wow.
Which also might say a lot about our psyche, my partner and I psyche. It's a good old comedy when it was in fact a horror film.
Yeah.
So we're like, great.
That's so good.
Since then, like, you know, how it got to the number that it did, 130, that also means that I submitted to a lot more film festivals.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
I went nutso on it because my partner had to stop me. It was like, you better stop fucking submitting to film festivals. You better stop right now.
Because those fees, right? Also, those fees are going to get you.
Yeah.
And then I did tell her this. I was like, don't worry about that, because like once we got into ScreamFest and like the higher caliber ones,
yeah, because ScreamFest is like the number one, right? Like
it's one of the top ones in the country.
Yeah.
And so we
really learning.
So we learned a lot, and so we like especially like what are the big genre festivals out there. Once we started getting into those, I started learning. I learned from like another festival goer was just like, you should just ask for submission waivers. Like once you get into enough really good film festivals, either that or you have like a major celebrity that's in your feature or short film.
Yeah.
Straight up ask for feature, like submission waivers. They may not give it to you because of course they need to eat. So they need festival fees. But a lot of them will just be like, here's a waiver. Or they're like, all right, we can't give it to you for free, but how about 70% off? And I would take it. I'll be like, holy crap, that's amazing. And so the latter half, the festival submissions were submission waivers. It would just be like, you know, like because we got into enough of these film festivals that the ones that they would recognize, they were like, oh yeah, that sounds good. Doesn't mean we would get into them like something like, you know, but the great thing is that if you submitted to a film festival for free and they rejected you, you didn't pay for it. So what's the harm?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
That, so we are now at finally at the tail end of the festival circuit. Our last film festival that we are airing is going to be the end of October for Film Quest.
How amazing is that? And I got to do a shameless plug. Your film is going to be at the Bridgeport Film Fest that we always talk about. It's screening in our Dark Night of the Soul, which is, it's like a horror. It's like not only horror. It's like thrillers, dark comedies, you know. So we're super excited that you're going to be screening there, of course, because it's amazing. It's amazing. Well shot, well produced, well acted. You were phenomenal. And that's your partner, right? Yeah, your partner.
Female.
Yeah, incredible. You guys are a powerhouse duo.
Oh, yeah. She and I'm glad that this film, in terms of the awards that it get, the majority of it was given to her as best actress. And it did its job.
She kills it.
It is her demo reel. Like, it is supposed to be about her. And so I'm glad that she's getting the recognition that she did. And that is where, you know, you did your job, where it's like, you know, if it was supposed to be a demo reel footage, but it became fancier, but they're getting acting acknowledgments to who it was designed for, then you did your job as, you know, the demo reel creator.
I'm also so obsessed and inspired that this just started because she needed some footage for her reel. And you guys created this monster, essentially, that's like killing it. So congratulations. That's so inspiring. And we talk about this a lot, about creating your own work and just doing the thing. And that's amazing. Congratulations.
We got to, through this festival circuit, because we met along other horror filmmakers. So this short film has like led way into us working with them. And then also us working with another horror filmmaker named Meg Swertlow, who, great filmmaker, and decided to make a romantic comedy that had no horror whatsoever.
Oh, wow. So
it was her experiment to do something that had no horror in it. And then for us to be cast again as the real life couple being in this romantic comedy, which we were extremely grateful for. So I think if anything, I was talking to my partner. I'm like, I've never done a romantic comedy because, you know, when you're in a historically excluded community, you don't really get those opportunities. So it was just nice to just be doing that.
But you created this wonderful listserv with like, and I don't want to get it wrong, but I think it's over 1,000 now.
That's correct.
Voice of an artist of color, which is extremely, extremely powerful and like amazing. So like, can you explain more of like what drove you to create this list and why it's so important for you to do it and how to grow so fast? Because you said it's been a year, right?
Yeah.
You just celebrated a year of this. So congratulations on that as well.
Amazing.
When I looked at the Excel sheet and then just saw like when I created it shows you like it started on June 30th of 2020. And so I was like, okay, what does that mean? That means that it was just at the tail end of that war I had with the acting school. Like it was near the end. So I think most likely it was like all that pent up energy and all of that, because we didn't exactly win. That was the thing, because that school was so stubborn and they stuck with their ways. And so nothing was accomplished. So I think there was a lot of like this frustration, this pent up energy. And at that time, there were also major discussions and articles. And I saw in Hollywood Reporter of like, you know, prominent white celebrities would like leave certain jobs. Like I know, like would it be like The Simpsons when it came to Apu, or when it came to like Family Guy and the character of Cleveland, like it would just be like no longer having white actors voice those characters because it was not appropriate. It was like, you know, you're basically having a white man play a black guy or a white man playing an Indian man. There were these massive discussions of just like, oh, you know, and then the big question is, where are these voiceover artists of color? And I was like, what do you mean, where are they? Like, they're everywhere. So but then I was like, maybe they really don't know. So then I just, when it first started out, it started out as just like for the Asian American voiceover artists. It was just for Asian Americans. And then quickly, within like a few days later, someone did suggest, hey, you could probably do a lot more good and spread it to everyone, like to the BIPOC community as a whole. And I was like, that is one hell of an undertaking, but what else do I have to do? So I'm like, you know, I got so much free time. Let's do it. And so then it just expanded. I created the different sections. And then a lot of it in terms of how it exploded was like, thanks through like just putting it out there, especially in the Twitter world, like because the voice of community lives in the Twitter world. Like they're in other social media, but they are especially powerful in the Twitter world. And so I got to meet so many great voiceover artists, whether like ones who are just starting out to the ones who've been working in the industry for years. And so once I started just sharing it, people were so, they would just share it. They would be like, oh my God, this list exists. Put yourself on it. Like there was no requirement, just like put yourself on the list. Every single day was almost like a maintenance duty of just like making sure that, you know, the information is correct. You know, there weren't some crazy people, and there were a few. There would be people who would like delete the entire list and put themselves on top. And so thankfully I would save the list every single day, or sometimes a few times a day, so that I would always be able to go back to the earlier draft, but it was fine. And then like, it was weird that it was so open-ended that anyone could input their entry. It was only until 3 months ago that I locked the system and you had to do it through Google Form, which people are like, you should have done that from the beginning. That would have made your life so much easier. And I'm I'm a guy who believes in work harder, not smarter. I am that guy. And then since then, like, I think the past few months, especially, like, it kind of was picking up for sure, but the last few months, that's when I noticed the major corporations noticing. And the corporations that noticed were Netflix, Nickelodeon, Spotify, Penguin, Random House, and then like multiple voiceover casting offices, agents, and production offices. They started really noticing around April of this year. It was gratifying to see so many actors of color who never done voiceover be hired for Netflix jobs. For like one actress in particular, it was her first voiceover, her first SAG-AFTRA, and her first Netflix job. It was all first and all one go. I honestly think that when it comes to a lot of actors of color, we have been training to the point, but never really given the opportunity. And when we are given the opportunity, no surprise, we kill it, because we've been trained for this, because we realized that like we couldn't be complacent about it. We had to like really be good at it, which is like, you know, that's also a problem where it's like, you know, we have to somehow overcompensate because no one will hire us. Mm-hmm. And so she was ready for it. Right now, my agent told me that their most ambitious thing is that they have another gig where they need a lot of people. And when my agent told me how many Asian actors they are looking for, my mind boggled, because they were looking for 164 Asian voiceover actors, and they wouldn't have done that if they didn't know this list existed, because right now this list has over 800 Asian voiceover actors. That's within the Asian section, and then like in the Black community there's like almost 300, and then Indigenous, which yes, it is smaller, but the fact that now there's like 47 was 46.
That's amazing.
46 more Indigenous actors than I ever knew. Now there's a Facebook group for it. So now there's like a community that I'm, you know, like fostering that kind of thing. And I think more importantly, it just shows that you can do it. Like you don't have to be like a professional, like, you know, an expert, or like have all these things under your gig. And then I'm thinking of that Ratatouille quote where it's like from Gusteau, where it's like, anyone can cook, you know? And I believe that for a voiceover, it's like, you know, anyone can do it. Like, it's just like, but then the second part of that quote from Ratatouille is, anyone can cook, but only the fearless will be great. And so that is true. But yes, in voiceover stuff, you know, there's always the argument, why does this list even exist when it's all about the voice? It doesn't matter. And unfortunately, the thing is, you know, majority of the jobs still go to white voiceover actors, because that is
that's the majority. Yeah.
More and so I think, you know, I don't believe, and especially during the pandemic, it was like to go away from the term using colorblind to color conscious, where it's like colorblind was like, yay, it seems great on paper where you can like, you know, cast whoever and doesn't matter about color, but the thing is that their cultural heritage does matter, so you can't just like blindly just place them in whatever movie you want. You have to be conscious that this person is Middle Eastern or Black or Indigenous. And so yeah. It doesn't mean you have to have like super culture references. You just have to know that, like, if it's like an like a Korean person, you're like, I want this Korean person, and I want him, his dad, to be Korean, obviously, because they're, now that it's a Korean actor. But if you're going to have a Korean actor and he has a dad who is not an American citizen, there are certain things that immigrant parents do that white mm-hmm. parents will not do. You just have to be aware of that. And that's where obviously the conversation of like, you need to have like writers of color in the room, because exactly. they know this kind of stuff. Anyways, long story short, that's where the voiceover thing started. And it was a passion project that continues to this day. And it looks like it's going to go for a while until it gets to a point where I know I did my job, where it's so commonplace that this list is not necessary. Like it's just become the norm.
To use it.
But that's where we are now.
And I also want to say that, like, I am so inspired and impressed that you started just these two projects you're talking about with us today, your film and this list. It started just as something maybe you didn't think was going to soar, and they are both soaring. And that is so admirable, because it's like, that is a true artist doing it for the art or for the better or for whatever the reason is, not for the benefit of it or for the fame of it, just doing it because it is your art or your idea or your passion. And then that's what an artist is, right? At the end of the day. So thank you. You're awesome.
Oh no, I just saw this quote today and I was like, I have to, it's really short. It's just, we should lift as we climb. And that's it's reminding me of what you're doing, you know, like as you're climbing, you're lifting up other people. And that's so important. And you should be very proud of yourself, Edward. I'm so happy to know you as well.
So I think we're going to jump right into our fun game. Yeah, Jason?
Yeah. It's called Name That Voice.
Hey. Jason, you want to cue the music number one and take the first one?
Yeah. So these are all going to be true or false. And we're just going to ask you, like, you know, about voiceover people, because you're, like I said in earlier, you're the voiceover king. That's what our game is today. and then, yeah, cue the music. The first question is true or false. Mel Blanc, who voiced the original Bugs Bunny, was also the voice of the 1990s Batman.
False.
Correct.
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 Good work. Starting off strong.
Off to a good start.
Yeah. Okay, next. True or false. Nancy Cartwright, who famously voiced Bart Simpson, also voiced Chucky Finster in Rugrats.
That's a hard one.
Ugh, I'm gonna say true.
Correct.
Oh, correct.
Okay.
Oh. Good work. He's like nice. Breaking a sweat.
I know. We had $1 million, but there's actually not a prize. So.
No prize. No prize.
True or false? EJ Daly, who voiced Tommy Pickles in Rugrats, was also the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
This I don't know, so I'm gonna. But then I'm just thinking of the voice, EJ Daly, who is the voice of Pickles.
Yeah, Tommy Pickles. Yep.
Tommy Pickles and Rugrat also did SpongeBob.
Yeah.
False.
Correct.
Three
for killing
three.
It. You're killing it. Okay, next. True or false? Phil Lamar, who famously voiced the Green Lantern, also voiced both Ren and Stimpy.
Oh what? Oh. I'm like, Phil Lamar, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm placing him. Samurai Jack. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say false.
Correct. You're killing it.
Okay.
You're killing it.
True or false? The actor who voiced Cleveland Brown on Family Guy. Family Guy, wow. The actor who voiced Cleveland Brown on Family Guy was a white male.
Yeah, true.
Yep. Mike Henry stepped down from the role in 2020, claiming characters of color should be voiced by people of color.
Hey.
Just took a couple decades.
There we go. So to get the prize of 100%, true or false, Cree Summer, who famously voiced Susie Carmichael from Rugrats, also voiced Catwoman in the recent animated show DC Superhero Girls.
Oh my God. True. She did.
100%.
Yes. You see?
Wow.
Voiceover king.
By the way, a lot of firsts today. My favorite were survival job story. And Jason, maybe I'm wrong, but I think he's the only guest who actually got 100%. without us just like tweaking it and saying you got 100 anyway. You actually, we usually give everyone 100, but they usually F something up here or there. That was a genuine 100. So congrats.
Man, this is a great questions episode. Are great. I love the question because it really, I really had to think about it because then I was just like, a lot of these actors, I'm like Cree Summer, Phil Lamar, like, you know, the, like Mel LeBlanc, and like, I can just hear it because it's like I grew up listening to these voices.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
exactly.
And then when you you're like, Phil Lamar also did Ren and Stimpy. I'm like, I mean, he's a great voice actor, but at the same time, when actors have certain timbres to their voice, I'm like, no, no.
Oh, this was a joy.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this was awesome. What a great, great episode. Genuinely, thank you so much for sharing everything.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Before you go, Edward, where can other people stalk you that are just maybe finding out about you today on our podcast? Social media, website?
I talk about Twitter. I use that a lot now. So you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram. It's the same handle, at Cinnabon Monster, which I realize that's another story in itself.
Cinnabon?
Yes. I'm basically obsessed with this product. So that is where people will find me on, especially on the Twitter realm. But now I've been surrounded by so many of the voiceover community. It is a lot about voiceover stuff and, you know, advice and just like, or just me ranting like a bitch. So it's one or the other.
Yes. Aww. And if you're not following us, and if you're tuning in for the first time because you love Edward and he's the best, follow us please at Survival Jobs Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and at Survival Jobs a podcast on Facebook. Love you guys. Love you, Edward. Sorry I'm confessing my love for you so early. I know it's early into the relationship, but thank you.
You better watch Make a Wish because Josephine's gonna come for that ass.
No, I'm scared. Yeah, wait, can we watch it or we can't?
Oh yeah, it's streaming somewhere, right?
It's still in the festival circuit, but I know we got picked up for distribution by Bloody Disgusting TV, so that will come on later this month, July 24th. So it'll be available on Roku, Vizio, MX Player. So they will distribute our short for 6 months, I think,
Along
with a bunch of others. But we're also in a bunch of other festival circuits. So like, if you want to find the journey of that, there's a website for makeawishshortfilm.com. There you can find the upcoming screenings, most of them obviously being virtual due to the pandemic. And also, like, if you really want to know which festivals did it get into, I list all of them. It's all there. It's all there.
Yay. Well, definitely.
And Survival Jobs, Survivors, if you want to come to the Bridgeport Film Fest, we're offering 10% off. You can see Edward's film, Make a Wish, live on Friday, July 23rd.
I'm definitely going to watch it as long as I'm not working.
Yes.
As long as I don't have duties that day, Jason, I would love to watch it.
Well, thank you again, Edward. Thank you, Sam. It was a wonderful thing.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.